You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specialising in food and science. Now, this podcast is part of our packaging series, and it's all about A Plastic Planet, which is a sustainability campaign. I'm joined by Sian Sutherland, co-founder of A Plastic Planet. We're going to explore the business case for becoming plastic-free, what a plastic-free future might mean in practical terms as well, but for retailers, for manufacturers, and for consumers. So, Sian, hello, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
What is A Plastic Planet?
So we are a global movement, really, for change. We exist for one goal only, and that is to ignite and inspire the world to turn off the plastic tap.
And how are you going to do that?
Really, I guess, by leading by example, by helping with solutions. I like to think of it really as almost like a burger. Probably a vegan burger today. But if you think of it as a burger, I think there's three different areas that we need to tackle. Obviously, governments. We know that we need policy, we need legislation, we need taxation. But governments are slow, unwieldy, and, sorry to say, heavily influenced by the fossil fuel lobbyists. So that's going to take time. Sometimes even the threat of legislation is enough to instigate change, but that's definitely going to take time, and we can come back to that. At the bottom of the burger bun, you've got the public. And I see the public as, in this instance, they are pretty much very disempowered because people buy what they are sold. And at the moment, nearly everything that they are sold, particularly in the world of food and drink, is wrapped in plastic. So it's almost impossible for you to try and wean yourself off plastic because you're being force-fed every single day when you go to the supermarket. The bit in the middle, that juicy bit, whatever it's made of, the burger bit, that's the bit that's interesting to me because that's industry. And as an entrepreneur myself, I am very passionate about the power of business. And I believe that business will make the change here and business can change the world. It just needs to want to. So our role as a pro-activist organization is how can we ignite and inspire industry from within? How can we help them find solutions faster? And how can we accelerate the pace of change so that we can really see a dramatic reduction in the use of plastic?
Okay, can you give us an example of the sorts of things you're trying to achieve?
Well, our very first campaign, which we became quite well known for, was 3 years ago. We came up with this, what seemed like a completely reasonable request, but apparently was like asking for moon dust, when we came out and said, wouldn't it be nice if the supermarkets could give us a plastic-free aisle? Wouldn't it be great, instead of pushing your trolley through these acres of plastic packaging, if you could just have one aisle out of the 40 in your local supermarket where if you want the choice to buy plastic-free, that you've actually got the choice there. In today's world, when you can buy meat-free, fat-free, dairy-free, whatever-free, and yet you can't buy plastic-free. So we went to all the supermarkets and met with a lot of senior bods there. We had a lot of media attention, so they all took the meeting. But the reality was, and this is going through 2017, so it was pre-Blue Planet 2 and the massive wake-up of the public. Met with all of these supermarket bosses who would, there'd be a lot of words, but actually no intention to make any kind of change. Because I know change is very difficult. We are addicted to plastic, particularly to wrap our food and drink. And it's very hard to change our long supply chains and use different materials, if any material at all. So that was our first campaign. It took us a year. In February 2018, we opened the world's first plastic-free aisle in a supermarket. It wasn't in the UK, sad to say. No coincidence, really, that it was in a Northern European supermarket in the Netherlands, because often they are quite a long way ahead of us, I think. And we opened this aisle, which you have to have a little reality check, that it was in West Amsterdam. It's not Paris or London or New York. It was a freezing cold February morning. And here was this little corner of a supermarket that was offering 700 product lines, just over, without plastic packaging. On that day, we did 55 media interviews from the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, Al Jazeera, the German TV channel, obviously BBC and Sky. It was phenomenal. And I think what that really showed was not just that we've got a great comms agency, which we do, but also since we'd started campaigning, Blue Planet 2 had happened. Every time people were going shopping, they were feeling guilty. And there were a lot of plastic packs and pledges coming out. And Theresa May had stood up and delivered her environmental policy, her 25-year environmental plan. And people were still feeling that everything was about something very far in the future. And today, no change was possible. And here was a symbol that change could happen today. Here was somewhere where you could go and you could do a weekly shop, plastic-free. So that was our first campaign. And I think in many ways that became a stimulus. The plastic-free aisles suddenly became part of rhetoric, really, of common language. When everybody thought we were balmy at the beginning, it became something that seemed quite feasible. And after that, we built up a very big library of alternative materials. So we have since then launched the world's first materials resource library. We attend a lot of the packaging fairs, like Packaging Innovations, where everybody who's looking for solutions goes. We created a thing called Plastic Freeland, which is really a physical manifestation of our online materials library. So all of these things are about not just talking about the problem. I'm not interested in talking about the problem. We will never show a picture of a turtle with a straw up its nose. We know. We're becoming immune to those kind of images. What people need help with now, particularly in industry, is how can they change? What other materials can they use? What is the implications of choosing those other materials? And then perhaps, how can organisations like A Plastic Planet champion them when they are doing the right thing?
Now, food companies are obviously profit-driven. And they will choose packaging that works for their profits. From the meetings you've had and the conversations you've had with companies, what are the challenges which are stopping producers and retailers from ditching plastic?
There's nothing really wrong with plastic. And we're very keen to never make plastic the devil in this. You know, plastic is the most incredible material. Who knew that man could invent a material that lasts forever? And instead of putting it on a pedestal and pricing it and treating it like gold, like this special indestructible substance that it is, what do we do with it? We treat it like rubbish. We throw it in the street, we throw it in the bin, we throw it in the oceans. So we're using this incredible material for the wrong purposes. And one of the least defensible of those has to be using it to wrap our perishable food and drink. But it is incredibly good at that. So this is why it's so difficult for supermarkets to think beyond it. Over the last 25 years, you know, if you go into an Asda or Sainsbury's or Waitrose, you will see that probably 98% of everything in that supermarket uses plastic in some way. So to reverse out of that and start to use different materials, I think is a very difficult thing to do.
Mm. So there must be some things that are easier than others. What's the low hanging fruit? What are the things that enrages you when you look around the supermarket? You go, oh come on, guys! At least you could do that. What are the simplest things that people could do?
The one that everybody refers to is the fresh produce aisle, because that's the one that used to be a little bit like going to a lovely French market, you know, where you could see and touch and feel. And there was this wonderful sensory experience of buying food, even in a supermarket environment. And then gradually that has slipped away. And now that is yet another aisle that's a sea of plastic. And it's so unnecessary. And there's a lot of instances where, I mean, originally we would always get pushed back by the supermarket saying, we can't take plastic out of that aisle because it will increase food waste. And all the trials that we've done, we've got a supermarket lab, Thornton Budgeons, up in North London, obviously our supermarket chain over in the Netherlands, absolutely zero increase in food waste when they take the plastic packaging off fresh produce. And I think one of the things that plastic has done is it's almost alienated ourselves from the food that we buy. It's distanced ourselves so that we have lost that vital connection with food. And I don't know about you, but you know, the whole thing of, you know, why do we need a best before date on a tomato? Why do we need to always be forced to buy three peppers in a plastic bag when actually maybe we only wanted two? So there's been a fantastic turnaround last year after the government regulations, DEFRA, everybody saying we need the plastic packaging because it actually reduces food waste. And then there was this very small announcement of a complete reversal of opinion from DEFRA at the end of last year saying, supermarkets, we advise that you remove plastic packaging from the fresh produce aisle to decrease food waste. Because when you can buy only what you need, we're not going to waste as much at home.
So that's about pre-packaging rather than somebody going around and grabbing a little bag and putting their potatoes in it.
Exactly. And you'll see many supermarkets now, instead of having that flimsy little plastic bag for you to put your potatoes or whatever in to buy exactly what you need, that they are giving paper. And so the paper bag, just that normal brown paper bag that we can all remember from many years ago, or even reusing little net bags. One of the things that we introduced into Thornton Budgeons, because sometimes you do want to have a collection. You want to be able to grab a bag of potatoes, for example. You don't always want to have to pick your potatoes one by one. And what we've introduced there are these beechwood nets. So you know when you see limes and lemons and they're in those nets, they're always made of plastic. Completely unrecyclable. They clog all the machines up. They're a nightmare. They will always end up either being burnt or in the environment somewhere. So instead of those, we're using a waste product from the timber industry, from the beechwood industry, to make these nets that are really, in effect, a bunch of twigs. And they perform in exactly the same way.
And so what are the objections from the industry that you think are the least tenable ones, you know, the ones you can brush aside most easily?
Food waste, absolutely now. And we have many examples of that. Convenience is always going to be one. And that is one that is thrust upon us all the time. It's our customers, they demand convenience. And this is where we have to step back and think, you know what, we humans are an incredibly adaptable race. Species. You know, we can change very quickly. If we are sold something in a different way, we'll get on with it. We've got better things to think about. So I think if supermarkets decided unilaterally we are going to change the way that we sell certain products, let's say bread. You go down the bread aisle, pretty much everything in the bread aisle is in plastic. Bread is not designed to last for weeks, and yet plastic will last for centuries. So it's obviously a misfit that we're using this material there when there's so many others. So there are certain areas where it's very easy to change. The big thing, of course, is money. And plastic is the most subsidised material in the world from the most subsidised industry in the world, the fossil fuel industry. So it's incredibly hard for materials manufacturers to compete against the price of plastic. And you look at the price of virgin plastic versus even recycled plastic, it's cheaper to buy virgin plastic than it is to buy recycled. So there is no level playing field if you are in the business of creating material that is more nature friendly. It doesn't have the subsidies that the fossil fuel industry has, definitely doesn't have the scale and the power. 99% of all plastic is fossil fuel. And it's so easy for us to look at a bag and a bottle and not think, actually, all that is solid fossil fuels.
So there are various different ways that you could achieve your aims. I guess there's public pressure, moral pressure, but there's also things like regulation. How do you feel about the idea that each piece of plastic packaging should be taxed and that would maybe change food manufacturers' attitudes?
I think we live in a world where somehow it has become acceptable for you to use a toxic, indestructible material as your choice of packaging and have no responsibility for it for its second, third, fourth, fifth, forever life. How did that happen? I can't think of any other industry. You look at somebody like, you know, sorry to pick on one person, but let's pick on Coca-Cola. The rest of the world do, so why not us? So Coca-Cola, bizarrely, the most loved brand on the planet and also the biggest polluter of the planet. Every single year, they pump out 120 billion plastic bottles. They have no responsibility for what happens to the next. We now know what's happening to them next. But for some reason, it's not Coca-Cola's responsibility. I think that the next 5 years, we will see a dramatic shift in the onus of that responsibility. It has to go to the producer. If you choose to use a certain material, you have to be responsible for its second, third, fourth, fifth, forever life.
But how do you achieve that? Do you think that's down to regulation?
It's definitely down to regulation. So I think taxation will play a major part in it. The autumn 2018 budget, we were very involved in pushing for the plastics tax. I worry that will be watered down. The whole movement towards, let's see if we can restrict the tax on anything that has less than 30% recycled content, I don't know how that's going to be policed. And the reality is, plastic is plastic is plastic. Even if it's recycled plastic, it is only one step away from the bin, the landfill, the incinerator, the ocean. It's not the answer. Recycling plastic is 100% never going to get us out of this mess.
And there is a transactional point to somebody throwing that away. So somebody has to pay for the waste collection, for the recycling if it's recycled, for the dumping if it's dumped. So there is an amount of money being paid there, and I presume why not put that cost onto the producer of the material rather than the council that needs to pay for the either recycling or the taking away, which is what we pay for eventually.
Exactly,
anyway.
Which is the public paying for it.
However, that's going to cause an enormous rumpus, isn't it? What do the big packaging creators say?
They see it coming like a train. So, I mean, there's a lot of conversations happening in DEFRA, happening in Parliament now. Producer pays, extended producer responsibility. And it's our job really as activists to make sure that things are not compromised. One of the initiatives that we've been very involved in, a year ago, we put what is called an early day motion. This is a whole new world for me as an entrepreneur.
I like it.
An early day motion into Westminster because we were made aware, and I think the rest of the UK is now well aware after certain BBC programmes, made aware of what is happening to our waste. And you may rinse out your little yogurt pot and pop it in the right bin and think, I've done my part. That's the limit of my responsibility because we didn't know what was happening to our rubbish. And now we know very clearly that over 60% of our plastic waste is being exported, majorly to developing countries who definitely do not have the infrastructure to deal with it. We don't have the infrastructure in our rich, developed economy here in the UK. So you can guarantee that some of the countries that we're sending our waste to don't. So our early day motion was very simple and asking for an outright ban on the export of our plastic waste to developing countries. We had 40 cross-party MPs back this. We pushed it very hard last year, as you can imagine, trying to get anything tabled at Westminster through 2019 was difficult because, everybody was talking about the B word, not the P word. But the great news was that in the general election, our early day motion asking for that new law was actually embedded in all three major party manifestos and was then included in the Queen's speech. So it should be part of environmental policy going forward. Because I know if we see our waste, if we have to deal with our waste, deal with our own dirt on our own shores, not shipping it off to some of the poorest people on the planet and expecting them to deal with it, we will turn off the plastic tap. Because to have, we recycle only 9% of our plastic in the UK right now. So imagine if we suddenly had a trebling of the amount of plastic waste to deal with on our shores. We're definitely going to have to look at serious reduction.
Now, we're recording this in January 2020. Brexit is obviously barreling towards us. What do you think is likely to change? I mean, obviously, this is there's a lot that will happen mm-hmm. with Brexit. But do you see the EU as more motivated to reduce plastic or to regulate it or to tax it? Or do you see the UK as a standalone entity having more teeth in this area?
I think it's an opportunity for the UK to actually step forward and show some kind of leadership. And I am cautiously optimistic that that might be the case. Let's see. We have a prime minister. We have a prime minister who likes to create a reputation for himself. And I sense that he might be a little bit more of a secret environmentalist than we think. So what would be wonderful is to see that, yes, Brexit is now going to happen. And when we are standing on our own two feet, then wouldn't it be incredible that rather than default to the lowest common denominator of environmental policy, which is probably Trump, that we can actually rise above to something that really shows some leadership. And I think what perhaps the government will want to do is show that we can exceed anything that European Parliament, European legislation are looking to enforce over there. And that would be a great thing.
Now, it comes down to business, really, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can try and advise people about this, and you can try and create a moral imperative, but it really, you know, the forces of change are quite economic, certainly in this country and right now. Is there also a potential side to this where you are offering companies a net benefit from doing this? Have you come up with tools or suggestions about ways that companies can save money by not using plastic?
I think it's probably good for top line and bottom line. There are many instances where we're using plastic, which has a fake price right now, and that soon should be rectified.
Can you explain, just before we carry on, can you explain what you mean by that?
The fact that it is such a heavily subsidised material.
And you think that's going to change?
With the plastic tax.
Right.
Yes. And when that happens, at least we'll have a level playing field. Because right now, if you are producing one of these new amazing biomaterials, apart from the sheer economies of scale that plastic has over any alternatives, it's very difficult because you do not have the same kind of subsidies. What would be exceptional and laudable would be for the UK government to seize this as an opportunity to not just divest of the fossil fuel subsidies that most countries in the West are guilty of, but actually take some of that and stimulate a new economy, which is based on using materials that nature can actually handle. So that would be something where we are always looking at this as a kind of doom and gloom of, oh, what are we going to do? Plastic's out now, so what else can we use? It's going to cost us more money. Instead of that, where there is change, there is opportunity. And I think that we are incredible in the UK at inventing things. You know, we are pioneers of so many new ways of working, and there is an opportunity here for us to lead a new biomaterials economy.
Now, there are other alternatives to plastics. Some of them are seen as potentially more damaging or not the solution to the problem that they purport to be. So compostable cutlery that isn't particularly compostable unless you're very specific about how you do it. How do you feel about these alternatives?
We're not going to get there on day one. This is going to be a staged solution. And every step that we take down a different path, I feel has to be a good move. Remaining with the status quo out of fear, that kind of inaction is not going to get us anywhere. So there are many solutions out there that probably will not be the solutions in 5 years' time, but they're a step down a different path. So we applaud anyone and anything that is moving away from plastic and exploring other materials and other waste management methods. And you refer to things like the compostables. And the compostables, you know, that's a massive debate of, is the infrastructure there? And for the last 2 years, I cannot tell you how many times I've had to defend, is it better to have a compostable versus a fossil fuel plastic? And it's always been the recycling industry, the plastics industry, saying we can't have compostables because they contaminate the plastic recycling industry, you know, the whole system. I don't know how we can contaminate something that actually doesn't exist to any scale in this country. We're only recycling 9%. Then you look at the fact that if we did have a better infrastructure for industrial composting, which is what many of these new materials are going to need, what are the other benefits of us having a good industrial composting infrastructure? Perhaps it could be that the answer to one of our other problems, we've only got 60 years of good harvest left in our hungry, depleted soils. Why are we not ploughing goodness back into the soil? Why are we not collecting our food waste from every household and getting that back into the soil? And at the same time, perhaps we are creating the conduit for some of this alternative packaging. So compostables aren't the answer to everything. And there's definitely a time and a place. On the go is probably a good use of compostables because it's very hard to separate waste at street level. But rather than thinking compostable, you know, let's put all our energy into those and, oh, look, it's not perfect because we don't have the infrastructure right now. Let's build the infrastructure. You're probably aware that by the end of 2023, we have already agreed as part of our European commitments that will continue, that we will have mandatory food waste collection from every household in the UK. Right now, we only compost 10% of our domestic food waste. That's a crime in itself, isn't it? What's happening to the rest of it? It goes to landfill or it gets burnt. We're not ploughing it back into the soil. So the fact that we're going to be having this much better infrastructure and system of collection, what are we going to do with it all? So a little like, I remember at when the China ban, I remember Michael Gove being asked, what are we going to do when the China ban happens with National Sword at the end of 2018, and he said, I have no idea, we haven't got a plan. Let's hope that we don't get to the end of 2023 and we don't have a plan with what we're going to do with all this food waste.
Well, yeah. Now, you obviously look at this on a sort of global level. And for instance, you've looked at the Netherlands. Now, which countries are best at coping with this avalanche of plastic? And what can we learn from them?
There's different ways that people think that they're coping with it. And much as we always look at the Northern Europeans and think they're so much better at recycling, the actual amount of plastic that becomes another thing is actually very small. There is this little phrase, one of those little weasel phrases to me, which is waste to energy. And I remember having a conversation with the CEO of one of the biggest Danish supermarket chains. And he said, oh, I don't know what the problem is in the UK. We've got it fixed here. Because we take all the plastic and we heat our nurseries and our hospitals with it. And I had to say, can we just backtrack a minute? Why is that different to just burning fossil fuels? That's all you're doing there. So somehow you've couched this in a lovely little cozy way of we're heating our nurseries with our plastic waste when actually it's simply a fossil fuel that's been taken out of the ground. It's had a little intermediate life as a bottle or a bag, and then you're burning it. So that's clearly not the answer. So it's very difficult to scratch, you know, not scratch deeply into all these different infrastructures and see, is anybody doing it right? Mm. Because if recycling was the answer, why do we need any more plastic? We've got 6.3 billion tons of plastic languishing in the environment. Why don't we just recycle that? Why is the plastics industry ramping up? Why is the price of plastic coming down so much, which is the cheap fracking gas we're seeing coming out of the US? So why are we actually looking at a threefold increase in plastic production within the next 10 years if recycling is the answer? Mm. So none of those things can actually be working. No, I cannot see any country that is properly dealing with its waste. Everybody is exporting. The US actually recycle 4.4% of their plastic in the US. And it's on the decline. Many councils in the UK are putting their hands up saying, we're not even going to pretend that we're not even going to collect plastic for recycling because we're not doing it anymore. Mm. So we may as well be honest about it. And the one thing that I find hugely positive is at least we're telling the truth. And we have lived under this lie, this myth of recycling for many decades now. And the first thing, you know, we're addicted to plastic, as we all know. I am such a plastic addict myself. And the first thing you have to do when you're an addict is look in the mirror and tell the truth. And I feel that that is starting to happen. The veil has dropped. There are no recycling fairies out there. They don't exist. So what are we going to do with it? And as soon as we start to address that, I think we can recognise the answer has to be turning it off at source.
And so in terms of the consumer, so we talked a bit about business and about retailers. What about consumers? Now, often I hear from the retailers that they are simply providing what customers want. Mm-hmm. Not sure if that's quite the case. I think they're guided by what's available. But what do you think consumers can do? And obviously, a lot of our listeners are part of the food industry, but they care about what their consumers are going to do. So mm-hmm. when you talk to individuals, what are you trying to empower them with? What do you want them to actually do?
It's very difficult for people on an individual level to change because there just isn't choice out there. So when we're talking to individuals, you can say things like, yeah, banish cling film from your house and use a refillable and never use a plastic bottle again. All of those things are obvious, but they are tiny little steps towards a massive problem. I'm much more interested in how can those individuals who probably work in big business, how can they become catalysts for change within their organisations? Because that's where the change is going to happen. I think that in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, we will look back and many of the big businesses of today will be the dinosaurs of tomorrow if they don't change fast enough. And there is a groundswell of resentment, really, and anger from the public that change isn't happening fast enough. So the one thing that us, the shopper, can do is champion the brands and the businesses that are trying to do the right thing. For once, let's just not think about convenience. Take an extra moment to take the individual apples versus grab and go the bag of apples. And I know that we've lost that art. You know, we've lost that art of maybe even enjoying the food shop. It's extraordinary to me how, you know, if you think in the UK, shopping is a leisure time activity. You wake up on a Saturday and think, oh, should we go shopping today? But nobody thinks, let's go to the supermarket as a leisure activity. It's almost a distress thing that you do. Whereas you go on holiday and you think, wouldn't it be wonderful to go to the local market? Because that's the experience that we want to have with our food. So a big part of our drive with the supermarkets, and forgive me, I know I've gone off on a tangent, but a big part of our drive with the supermarkets is how can we recreate that feeling, that connection of that wonderful multi-sensory gustative experience in a supermarket about freshness and flavour and smell and taste and get people excited about food shopping in a way that I don't think they are anymore. Mm. I think that is a tremendous opportunity for our supermarkets. And you can see people starting to do it. You know, Waitrose with their unpackaged experiment, which I know had a phenomenal reaction. I know places like Thornton Budgeons, you know, it's great for me that this is not an affordability issue. Being able to buy plastic free cannot be an affordability issue. A little bit like organic. If you look back and think the beginning is the organic movement and the price disparity between organic produce and non-organic. And it was almost like, let the poor people eat the pesticides. Let the rich people afford the clean stuff. We can never allow that with plastic. And you see organisations like Iceland Foods taking great strides, Thornton Budgeons, Co-op. These are the affordable supermarkets who are making things happen in a different kind of way. So that's very gratifying, I think, that it's not about the premium supermarkets. In fact, many of them are the slowest to move.
Now, in terms of people's perception of this as a problem that needs to be solved, I mean, you mentioned Blue Planet, mm-hmm. and obviously there's Extinction Rebellion. Have you seen a huge acceleration of willingness to well, first of all, there's the willingness to accept that this is a problem. And secondly, I think the second phase of that is willingness to actually do something about it. Has that just suddenly shifted into a different gear?
Definitely with Extinction Rebellion and the school strikes and everything that you've mentioned, that people are more aware than they ever have been before. And this is definitely not a trend. This is a new normal for us. But we've now got a timeline. We've got 10 years. Every single day we read stories in the newspapers. I don't think we've ever had a moment in time like we have right now where change can happen. And people are ready for it. They have an appetite for it. What I find very interesting about the plastic issue is that plastic is slightly the canary in the coal mine of hyperconsumption. So it's the gateway. that if you think about plastic, and we care about plastic, and there are no plastic deniers out there, because it's the one thing we can blame nobody else for. It's the one thing where it's visible, it's tangible, we see pictures of it every day. There's no one else to blame for it. And it's recent and it's fixable. So I find plastic is the gateway to, if you think about plastic, if we can fix plastic, we will fix so many other things in the ongoing initiatives that happen when we fix plastic. And the connection between the climate crisis and plastic is so close. So when I hear people saying, oh, a paper bag, I believe it has a higher carbon footprint than a plastic bag. Plastic was the enabler of our massive ramp up in hyperconsumption. And hyperconsumption is the reason for the climate crisis. It's that simple. And we all know that fossil fuels are a major contributor to the climate crisis. It's all connected in such an extraordinary way. And it's also connected in the way that we have treated nature as something that we can just plunder. We can take, make and waste. And what's wonderful now is that people are starting to think about how can we take and make and have zero waste, not even just less waste, but zero waste. How can everything have a value ongoing? And it's a very different way for us to think. And as I was saying, where there is this kind of shift, there is tremendous opportunity. And the businesses that embrace this, the businesses that change faster, they're going to be the big winners.
Well, I think we've covered this hugely well. Now, I think we should wrap this up, obviously wrap it up in paper rather than plastic, obviously, by just finding out what your view of the future is. What do you think's likely to happen over the next 5 to 20 years? And I know that it's crazy looking at the future, but let's just do it anyway. What do you hope, and then what do you really think is likely to be the reality?
One of the most exciting things for me last year was the meeting that was held in August in New York. And that was a meeting of 200 of the biggest companies in the Western world. And it was the leaders of those companies, and it was looking at what is the purpose of business? So the business circle coming together to redefine the original 1970s Milton Friedman definition of business, which has always been the purpose of business is profit, is to deliver and reward profit to shareholders. And it didn't get a huge amount of coverage in the UK, but definitely through the US it got a lot of coverage, that they redefined the purpose of business in that meeting. And profit is now number 5. And what gives me great hope is to think that if those organizations, and we're talking about the Apples and the Amazons and the Googles of the world, if those leaders actually, if this wasn't just rhetoric, if they actually change their own business models in order to make profit number 5. And of course, ahead of that, you've got employees and equality and paying a fair price and community and environment. If they actually change their business models in order to put profit as number 5, wouldn't that be an extraordinary thing? So things like that give me great hope. And only today, I received an announcement letter from the CEO of BlackRock, the huge investment firm, saying we all have to change. And I think one of the levers of change that I'm personally very passionate about is this is going to be about risk. And so we work with a number of different law firms on how do they advise their clients, how can they mitigate future risk. That's their job. And here we have a material like plastic where it is being misused. We know it has an impact on human health. For law firms to now be advising and investment firms to be implementing new policies on their own investment criteria to say we have to think in a different way. Our evaluation criteria will be managed in a different way. We need to mitigate the risk because there is a fiduciary responsibility for shareholders and directors to do no harm. And now we know what we know about the impact of industry on the environment, including plastic. We're never going to unknow. We have to change. So that's why I still get excited about the opportunity of business to really drive this change forward. Yes, doing what the people want. Yes, doing what their consumers want. But actually, there's going to be a multi-pronged a catalyst for why they're going to change. And I think the pace of change is going to start to pick up very quickly. Only 2 years, really. I think there's been a massive shift in at least what people are saying. Now, if we can change that from words into actions, happy days.
Well, good luck. I think we all need it to happen as soon as possible. Sian Sutherland, co-founder of A Plastic Planet, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.